You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The City of Racine Public Health Department issued an order Tuesday limiting mass gatherings of people through July 31st. According to the order, mass gatherings of any kind outside of a household unit are not allowed over the next roughly 10 weeks. One of the developments we're watching as communities around the state try to help stop the spread of COVID-19. Do you live in Racine County? Are you concerned about a surge of positive cases? Are you a business owner in Racine? How are you dealing with the situation? We're at 800-642-1234. Jonathan Delagrave is the county executive of Racine County. Jonathan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, Kate. Thanks for having me on and for the opportunity.
So the Racine Common Council voted last night to extend the emergency declaration in the city until July 31st. This is not, though, the extension of the Racine Safer at Home order, which runs through the 26th of May. Can you explain what rules are in place in the city and the county?
Sure. I will try to be succinct because it can be a little bit complicated. But the Safer at Home for the city of Racine ends May 26th. The city extended the declaration, much like the county.
And I think we're having trouble hearing you. Are you still there? No, I think we've lost Jonathan Delagrave, who's the county executive of Racine County. We're looking at how counties are being impacted by the coronavirus pandemic. And Racine has seen more than 1,000 cases, 19 deaths. We're looking at how the city is impacted and with your thoughts as well. Are you in a county that has some differing stipulations, differing regulations? Join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a business owner trying to negotiate different regulations in your county? Are you open right now? What safety measures are you following? Or are you concerned to open your doors? Have you gone through drive-through testing site in Wisconsin? What was the process like? What can you share with us? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're having trouble here getting our county executive back on the line from Racine County. We're talking with Jonathan Delagrave, who's helping us out to understand the situation on Racine County and what the city is doing, what the county is doing, and how those regulations may be a bit complicated. Join in at 800-642-1234. Jonathan, are you with us?
I am.
Okay,
I am.
Sorry about that. Yeah, go ahead to explain what regulations are in place.
So that's what the declaration order does. So the regulation, the city of Racine, they still have their safer at home until May 26th, where anybody pretty much primarily outside the city, we've put forth guidelines to businesses and service industry and restaurants on what are best practices to open. So a lot of our businesses are allowed to open outside the city of Racine.
Okay, but the city of Racine itself, it has a safer at home order in place, as you say, and has the stipulations on gatherings. And is that coming from the city's public health department?
Correct. That's coming from the city's public health department, whereas the central Racine County Health Department is saying really no mass gatherings over 50 as a guideline. We're unique in Racine County because the county doesn't have a health department. It's really ran by two health departments, one ran by the city, and then the other one is run by the rest of the municipalities as a board.
Yeah, so the central Racine County Health Department is the county, and then the city of Racine Health Department is the city. Can you explain the distinctions with those two health departments? And right now, are they on the same page? Are they working together?
So for sure that they're working together, whether that's through contact tracing or working together to provide community-based testing. So they are working together, and we're very much appreciative of that. The Central Racine County Health Department is made up of 13 municipalities. Each municipality has a representative on that board, and that health officer reports to that board. The City of Racine Health Department is part of the city's jurisdiction and through their operational government.
So when you are talking with city leaders in Racine and then the county, you know, how do you come to terms on how you approach a surge of cases? You know, is there some negotiation at what orders you should be putting in place? Is there debate?
Well, there's not really debate. I would just say that each health department has an emphasis on, first and foremost, the priority of the health and safety of the citizens of Racine County. And again, I think everybody can appreciate that. You know, they are working together on many, many issues. And for the two health departments, you know, in terms of the safer at home order, you know, each district is a little bit different. The city of Racine has a lot higher density. Their demographics in terms of races are a little bit different than those communities outside the city of Racine. So each health department made the best interest in their given their situations.
So as you talk with businesses, what are they saying about the situation, whether they are in Racine or outside the city?
Well, that's a great question. And what I can tell you is that, you know, the businesses that are allowed to open outside the city of Racine, they've been nothing but, you know, very, very trustworthy in making sure that social distancing guidelines are being handled. They've been proactive. A lot of businesses haven't even opened up yet in outside the city of Racine because they want to make sure that they've got a great plan in place to do so. You know, in the city of Racine, I think there's an anxiousness to open up, but they also understand, I think, given the situation, that it might take another week or so to be able to do that, and they're a little bit behind the businesses outside the city of Racine. But I know that they're anxious to open up. We have great businesses in the city of Racine, and as soon as they open up, we know that they'll be doing that safely as well.
You know, certainly touching base with those businesses is important, but how about churches as well and those places where people gather for spiritual services?
Yeah, so we did a great question, Kate, and I appreciate it very much. We did a Rebound Racine County report that the county authored and published to all of our people, all the citizens of Racine County. Ultimately, that report was divided into 11 sectors of our economy, and one of those sectors was of the faith-based sector. And that Rebound Racine County report ultimately says, here's how to open, here's how to open safely, here's how to sanitize. So really, it's about giving them those indicators of and best practices on how to open safely. So, you know, we refer our faith-based sector and our churches to that Rebound Racine County report. Given in the city of Racine, it can be a challenge, but I know that they're going to look at that report and do things safely as well.
We have Racine County Executive Jonathan Delagrave on the line. What do you want to know from him and how the outbreak is being handled in his county? Do you support counties that have issued their own stay-at-home order, or do you disagree with this approach to containing COVID-19, allowing businesses, allowing churches to make sure that they have the PPE, the protection they need to reopen safely? Join in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute with Jonathan Delagrave right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're zooming in on the situation in Racine County. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Racine County has the third highest number of positive tests statewide after Milwaukee County and Brown County. As Racine County continues to open, the City of Racine Public Health Department issued a new order this week for further social distancing into the summer months. Are you concerned about the upward trend in positive cases in Racine and Kenosha counties? What should the state or these counties do to contain the spread of COVID-19? Join in 800-642-1234. We have Racine County Executive Jonathan Delagrave, who stays with us. Let's take a call now. Mary is with us from Pewaukee. Hi, Mary.
Good morning, everyone. Be well. My comment was, well, I called in to actually make a suggestion that perhaps you have someone from the Wisconsin Tavern Association in to discuss the fact that a lot of people are going inside. A good option would be a patio where people can distance. I've been distancing. I wear a mask in public. I'll do so everywhere I go, so I will not go into a bar that is inside where people have no mask and they, you know, are too close together. You can't really wear a mask when you drink, so until we figure something out that way, I like going to a bar now and then as much as the next person, but we have to do something about it because when someone else doesn't follow the rules and regulations, everyone suffers.
Mary, like thank you. Yeah, thank you for calling in and sharing that. Jonathan, what are you seeing in Racine County with mask wearing and patios with businesses?
Well, first of all, in our rebound Racine County report, you know, we put some steps that businesses hopefully can do. So right now we're offering our county parks available for free. So if businesses are able to have the mobility to take their establishment on the road and be able to utilize our parks to do so, we're going to be able to do that. We look at things like closing streets, repurposing space in their bar to create more space so you can put a few more people in there and still social distance. And then in terms of masks, Kate, it's really about, I think most people that I see in the places I go are wearing masks and are pretty diligent in doing so. And recognize that you are safer with a mask on. And most people are doing it, not all, but most people are wearing masks.
Jonathan, let's look at drive-through testing, which is ramping up in Racine County on Monday. It's opened in your area at Festival Hall. What have you seen there?
Well, so we opened up two in partnership with, the county opened one, and then in partnership with the city, we opened one on Monday. So we have two now that have been going. First one started a week before the city. And look, there's no doubt that the coronavirus is going to continue to really have an impact for some time. So, testing is here, and it's a prudent way for people to recognize that it's a good option for their health, and knowing more about your health and people in your family's health is important. So we've had probably, I think, about 600 people on Monday get tested. So we're feeling good about that. And we have hopefully more testing sites to open here in the next week.
Well, how many more testing sites do you anticipate?
Well, we hope to have one in another area in western Racine County. And then what we want to try to do is be able to get a mobility testing site and kind of take it on the road. So where there are hot spots in Racine County, we can put a testing site where those hot spots may happen.
Oh, so would that mobile testing site option, would that still be like a partnership with the Wisconsin National Guard?
Correct. With the city of Racine, with the Central Racine County Health Department, and the National Guard. Yep, all three.
Have you seen any other counties doing this mobile-type testing yet?
Not that I know of. I'm sure it is happening, but I had no knowledge of other mobile testing sites.
Well, let's go back to the Rebound Racine County report. This was completed by a special task force. What information is this report giving to you and local organizations at this time? How is it setting a roadmap, if you will?
Well, first and foremost, it's not Jonathan Delagrave's report. It was made up of about 40 individuals who have really an expertise in the 11 really biggest sectors of our county's economy. And number one, it says, look, individuals want trusted sources on COVID. They want trusted sources to be able to know what is going on a daily basis. The report also lays out, for each individual and for their family, wake up every day and look at trusted sources of information to know what how COVID is affecting their community, municipality, or county, and then make the best decisions upon that trusted source of news. And then second, people want to know, where can I get PPE or public protective equipment? Mm-hmm. And then how do we sanitize our places so we can instill consumer confidence? So the report kind of lays all that out. And then, again, there are other things like, how do you get people off who are on unemployment? How do you get those individuals back to work? Who should I bring back to work first? What is a toolkit looking like in terms of, we're going to have a return to work COVID-19 a toolkit for all of our employees coming back? And I think that's a smart way to handle it for most businesses as well.
You're just throwing out a myriad of questions that all need answers from so many sectors of your community. So where do you go to throw your focus right now? What do you focus on?
Well, we focus on, number one, making sure that, look, if you are, it is safer to stay at home, period. That is a fact. It is safer to wear a mask. That is a fact. But also focusing on what are best practices for opening up your businesses, what is best practices in those businesses to sanitize and to have public distancing. So I know I trust our businesses in Racine County and our citizens to make the right choices. And our focus is to give them the trusted information based on the ability to do that.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Jonathan Delagrave, who is County Executive of Racine County. You can join in with your observations about what's happening with your county to contain the spread of COVID-19. Or are you living in Racine County now and have suggestions? Have you gone through a drive-through testing site? What was the process like? What can you share? We're at 800-642-1234. Jonathan, we've heard that this virus knows no boundaries, that it doesn't respect county lines or state lines. Racine and Kenosha are both seeing a surge of cases. How are you working with Kenosha County right now?
Actually, very closely. So the Kenosha County executive, who I have a lot of respect for, who's been in this position for longer than me, you know, we compared draft reports. I know they had a Kickstart Kenosha County report from their county government. We compared reports before we got done and before we issued them to the public. We're just talking about how best we can collaborate in terms of dissemination of information to our individuals in Racine and Kenosha County, because many people live in Kenosha, work in Racine, and vice versa. So we want to make sure information is consistent given the proximity of our two counties and the demographics as well. And the last thing I would add is, you're right about COVID-19. It knows no boundaries. It also knows no political assuasion. It also knows, no political economic or socioeconomic status as well. So really, we want to make sure, again, that trusted information is out there for anybody to be able to, who wants it.
I want to turn to Foxconn for a moment. There was talk last month of Foxconn working with Medtronic to make ventilators at its facility in Mount Pleasant. Did that go anywhere?
It did. Foxconn is working on that, as well as they're working on, they are making masks. I know that we did a substantial order with Foxconn. So they are in the PPE business right now, as well as working on making ventilators for people across the country.
Do we know at all about the activity at the Mount Pleasant plant, or about construction, or where things are at with Foxconn?
Sure, absolutely. So they are they're building their third building. We have about, once those three buildings are done, it'll be about 1.25 million square feet. They have a data building where they're going to be able to produce a lot of data throughout that makes sense for their business, and how they can best utilize their business. And then obviously they have a 1 million square foot manufacturing or Gen 6 building that's going to be complete here by the end of the summer. And then they have about a 300,000 square foot building, and that's where they're making the masks and whatnot.
Do we know how many people are on site there in this work of making masks?
Yeah, they've hit their targets in terms of employment with a WEDC. I don't have that metric in front of me right now, but it's a hub of activity for sure.
Well, Jonathan, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
No problem, Kate. Thanks for having me, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Jonathan Delagrave is Racine County Executive. Coming up, Dear Office Life. It was a good run. You were the last barrier between work and home life. Oh, we look at how office floor plans will change and what challenges companies face putting their employees back into their cubes, sharing a space with that beloved office mate, Rob Ferret. What are your concerns? 800-642-1234. Join in. We'll be back to talk office space life right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a quick mention here that WPR continues to bring you the latest on the pandemic with state, national, and international developments. With additional coverage from NPR and the BBC, you can find a hive of the latest news and analysis at WPR.org/COVID. Right now, that's the theme from The Office, the beloved NBC sitcom. We're looking at how office floor plans and architecture will change. The threat of the coronavirus is forcing employers and developers to rethink everything from the layouts of offices to the most basic amenities, like, can the shared coffee machine stay? My goodness. Where are we at here? Can we talk about the push-pull, what you see at your office? Are you going in, by the way? How has it changed? 800-642-1234. Ronnie Mola is a senior data reporter for Vox's Recode, where she covers business and technology. Ronnie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Well, one thing that the pandemic has demonstrated is for a lot of companies is that remote work is possible, that employees get stuff done, they get their work done. Do you expect a lot of companies will keep this situation where their employees are at home right now?
Absolutely. We're seeing something like, there's an MIT estimate that says something like 34% of people who were previously commuting to work are now working from home. And obviously that's higher than it's going to be, but a lot of estimates put I've seen some estimates put it that some upward of 30% of people will continue to work from home after this. Right now, just for context, that's more like 4 or 5% of the population. So that would be a huge, huge jump.
Is there any way we can get a handle on productivity and the change in productivity when you move the work home?
Sure. I mean, a lot of what's happening now, and I think when people first in a rush moved to work from home, you know, all of a sudden in the middle of March, people's offices were closing. All of a sudden they weren't going into the office and maybe were working from home for the first time. So you saw a decline in productivity, but you know, it's really hard to parse out what part of that is because, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic,
right,
and it was a
right.
rush and this wasn't people's choice versus like whether you could actually be productive at home. There have been a number of studies that show that people can be very productive working from home. Of course, those entail people choosing to do so, people planning to do so, and also maybe coming into the office some of the time. You know, that it, and the problem with what we're doing now is that it's sort of, no one's choosing to do it, it's forced. There was no plan for a lot of people. It just happened all of a sudden. You know, your company might not have instituted a policy that said these are the best practices. And most importantly, it's sort of indefinite, which, you know, you're not coming into the office once or twice a week to check in. You're just always home. So that could be part of the issue. I think when there's more of a middle ground, you'll see a productivity come back up.
I see, you know, so many companies are looking at each other like, what are they doing down the street? What are they doing in Silicon Valley? And, you know, I remember Marissa Meyer at Yahoo, who famously recalled all the employees back into the office, banning work from home. And this was like, I don't know, like 2012, 2013. And I had little ones. She had little ones. And I was like, what is she doing? Have you seen? And now we're looking at Silicon Valley saying, yeah, you know, you stay home all you want. This is a sweeping change going on.
You know, I always thought the Yahoo calling people back was sort of retrograde. And you saw a few companies do that. But by and large, I think the major tech companies have been moving in this direction for a long time, giving their workers a bit more freedom to work from home, at least some of the time. And as you said, you know, the biggest tech companies now, I forget what the dates are for each, but I think Facebook, Google have said, you know, don't come back for a while. And then Twitter is something like saying something like, you don't have to come back at all. I do think this is the new way people, or this is the new way tech companies and other companies are going to offer employees a little bit of more freedom. And you could see how that's very attractive. Some, as you said, with you, with young kids or people who don't want to live in big cities, you know, don't want to, for Silicon Valley, don't want to pay the really high rents that you pay in the Valley or in San Francisco. You could see this being really attractive and making your paycheck go a lot longer somewhere else or a lot farther somewhere else.
Yeah. What kind of changes will that require companies to make and how they organize or how they manage their employees?
I think there's a few things. First, there's going to be a different sort of onboarding process when, you know, normally when you start working in an office and let's be clear, all of this has to do with office work. We're not talking about essential workers. We're not talking about like first responders. We're talking about people who work in an office who have it, who obviously have a different situation than many of people in America. So as far as offices, that will mean when you typically went into an office, they would give you a computer, you would get your desk. It might be a little bit like that, except they're going to send that to your home. You know, you're going to get your laptop. You might get some sort of standing desk or something like that to make your house more work appropriate. Might have to make sure you have a better broadband connection than you would if it was just for personal use. There might be some security measures. So there's the hardware part of it. And then there's also the company culture part of it. It's developing a culture that, you know, has sort of rules. It's more obvious when you're in an office that maybe I shouldn't go walk up and to someone and talk to them. They're busy right now. You know, that's a little less defined on Slack or Google Chat or however we're communicating with each other. So we have to sort of set up a rules of like, what's a realistic expectation for when your coworkers are going to respond to you? You know, should you make sure you have your notifications off so that you're not getting pinged in the middle of the night? Should you like how long, when in the morning is it appropriate to ping another colleague? Things like that. So I think it's just going to be a matter of sort of developing the same standards that were maybe more obvious at work, codifying them and setting them in place for people who are working from home.
We're talking with Ronnie Mola, who is a senior data reporter for Vox's Recode. She covers business and technology. We're looking at the future of office space in America and where it's headed. Are you worried about getting sick when you return to your office? If you could work from anywhere you wanted, anywhere, where would you move? Where would you go? If office work becomes less centralized and disperses, what effect do you see that having on your city or town, on real estate? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. So, Ronnie, what happens to the open office floor plan? Is it gone or how do you modify it?
It's so funny. For years, people were complaining about open offices. And open offices, by the way, were the new great thing. You know, they were a response to these cubicles of the 80s that were really depersonalized and ugly looking. And then all of a sudden, every tech company and every forward-looking company started making these open office plans where there's no division. There aren't offices. You could kind of see clear across your office. It looks really nice. You know, in practice, it's really annoying when your coworker right next to you in my case is reporting or someone's talking and you're all talking over each other and it can be pretty distracting. So now with COVID-19 and with this sort of real health, concern of going back into the office, a lot of companies are having to rethink this open office plan that they'd the reason for having it in the first place was that it caused a lot of collaboration. You would bump into your colleague and you might not work with all the time, and you might end up talking and you'd have an idea. It was this really like nice idea that we would be more collaborative if our spaces were open.
And it sure looks now, prettier. I mean, it looks prettier with the open air instead of all those, you know, gray tan walls up everywhere.
Right. There's young, attractive people sitting at couches together and just, you know, like it has a beautiful like tableau, the idea of it. But now that same thing is sort of a liability, you know, the no barriers means that germs can pass from me to you. It means that, you know, it actually feels sort of unsafe. So one of the things, of the many things I wrote about recently about how the office of the future might change, is that we might get rid of this open office plan. We might go back to the idea of having barriers. One source I talked with called it the recubicalization of space. Hopefully it's not as ugly as that. Like I'm seeing a lot of the mock-ups for it. But the cheapest and fastest way is to sort of throw up these plastic barriers and kind of create ad hoc offices that we haven't had for years.
Well, even the least inexpensive ways to bring social distancing to the office space will take funding, will take money. What does that look like to be able to bring these types of protections, whether it's automatic elevator doors or something else?
Yeah, a lot of the things I talked about in my article were these sort of pie in the sky ideas. It was everything was going to be voice controlled. It was you're going to walk up to an elevator and it automatically takes you to your floor. There's, different sanitation techniques, different, like all of this requires so much money. And the issue is, you know, we're in a recession or what is seems to be a recession and everyone's cutting back right now. So you have to think that we're going to go for most companies, maybe, you know, big tech companies might be different, but most companies are going to go for the cheapest and fastest option. So while a lot of these ideas are really good, they might not be implemented, or at least might not be implemented soon because they're not affordable. So I think what you're going to see is a mixture of things like the cubicles, the ad hoc borders, but also just a more of a reliance on keeping people home. Like really, that is the cheapest way to do that. And over time, once your lease is up, you don't have to rent an office space. You could, if you have everyone working from home, they're sort of, your employees are sort of footing the bill, you know, for the office. Their home becomes the office. So I see that as sort of the path of least resistance.
We have Ronnie Mola from Vox's Recode leading us through Office Life 2.0 after the pandemic recedes and how workspaces will change, barriers, square footage, traffic flow and hallways. How will the conference room work anyway? Taking your calls, your ideas on altering office buildings. Are you a developer or in charge of adapting spaces for workers? How are you working right now? What are you learning? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Ronnie Mola here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The coronavirus introduces a new challenge to the love it or leave it open office concept. So in the short term, architects and designers, property managers and public health people will say that pretty much every aspect of this kind of workspace will need to change. We're looking at what's next with data reporter Ronnie Mola of Vox's Recode, who's our guide. Let's take a call on this. Richard is joining us from Two Rivers this morning. Hi, Richard.
Hi, good morning. If it's a little loud and a washer's on a spin cycle, it should shut off.
All right. But,
I worked for 30 years in physical therapy, and I consider myself knowledgeable on the ergonomics of a workstation. And I just want to give a few quick tips. It all starts out with a good chair, gives you good lumbar support where you can adjust the arms so your elbows are at 90 degrees to the top of your desk. Your legs should be, feet should be firmly on the ground, and your knees should be at 90 degrees without any pressure on your thighs, so you have to adjust the chair height. You should not have to reach very far, so your keyboard should be set up right at your fingertips. and the best keyboard is a split keyboard. And then the monitor should be directly at eyesight level, where you can look straight at the monitor without tipping your head down or forward.
So my guess is, Richard, that curled up in the corner of the couch with the laptop teetering on your knees is probably not the best idea.
No, not good at all. I just wanted to give those good suggestions, and you can look it up on Google or something for further suggestions, but I'll take off the air.
Richard, thank you. Ronnie, you know, Richard, having the physical therapy background, said it's, you know, really important. Don't make light of those ergonomics and making sure that you have the right pieces of your anatomy in place so you don't get the aches and pains.
He actually brings up a pretty good point about I've talked with quite a number of people, designers and architects who are saying, or at least interior designers saying they're seeing a lot of demand for people updating their home office space. You know, all of a sudden when you're working from home all of the time and you hadn't been before, you know, it doesn't really cut it to just sit on your couch. It becomes more and more necessary that you actually have a dedicated space for working. And so you're going to actually see, I think you're going to see people investing a lot more in their home offices or trying to convert, if they can, you know, a portion of their apartment or their living space into a place that's like, that's quiet and they could take Zoom calls. And yeah, and there will be considerations like, what sort of chair should they get? Do they get a standing desk? You know, like if you're spending the majority of your time at home now working, it becomes a lot more important what sort of furniture and setup you have.
Right, because this is not just happening for a one-off day here and there, that, you know, this is perhaps for a much longer time.
An indefinite amount of time for some people, yeah.
Yeah. You know, a lot of employees might not feel safe coming back to their office even after the pandemic wanes. What rights do employees have in regards to whether they need to be in the office?
You know, I'm not actually sure about that. I do know that office managers and different companies are trying their best to make people feel safe. You know, whether that means they really are safe is different, but a lot of it is, I think someone referred to it as theater, as the setting up of your office where I'm 6 feet away from you. And we know that 6 feet is important, but we also know that it's an arbitrary number. You know, does that mean I will not get sick if someone's 6 feet away from me? It doesn't, but it does mean that, like, you're relatively safer. So a lot of the things that office managers are doing are trying to make people feel safe. It's putting disinfectant everywhere, you know, like hand sanitizers everywhere. It's making it more obvious that people have been cleaning the buildings. Obviously, they're going to want people to clean the buildings more often, but also make note that they have cleaned it, just so that we're aware that we feel safer, that, you know, these offices that we left in sort of a panic in the middle of March, you know, don't become this sort of traumatic and scary place that we come back and sort of feel like, okay, I can be here. And one of the ways in which, one of the less expensive ways in which companies are doing this is having employees come back in stages, maybe having like an A or B or C team, so that your office isn't at full capacity. It isn't, let's say there was 100 people working there. Maybe now at any given time, there might be 30 people there, depending on which day of the week it is.
Let's take another call now. Sharon is joining us from Minocqua this morning. Hi, Sharon.
Hello. I hope you can still hear me because I'm driving in northern Wisconsin. Thank you very much. I'm calling because your guest mentioned about we might be going back to having those little tiny cubicle spaces. And I was just wondering if anyone had done any research, especially with this COVID-19 virus, on if you increase the amount of surface area that the virus can drop on, especially on like those fabric walls, those cubicle walls, which are often made of fabric, it's difficult to sanitize those. But part of the open office space is to really improve air circulation, which could really help in improving the, you know, preventing the spread of the disease, so to speak, in the office.
Yeah, Sharon, thank you for bringing that to the table. Ronnie, are they looking at that in terms of those cubicle walls being fabric and maybe an open air is more healthy to keep that air circulation?
I think that's a really good point. One of the things that kept coming up when I was speaking to different office experts was their insistence on the type of materials that we should use in the future. They were looking for, in one case, using copper, things that are sort of antimicrobial. I think you're going to want to definitely see different cubicle separators than you used to see. Something that would retain the germs, obviously, is not what they want to be going for. Something that's easily cleaned, that doesn't hold on to much in the first place, I think would be ideal. The point about office circulation is also a really good one as well. You're going to see a lot of investment in HVAC and different air circulation and sanitizing systems. Those are some of the changes that'll happen to offices that you won't really see, but like that should help. I also heard of people using sort of taking a key from healthcare in that they might use something like UV disinfection between meetings or maybe at night or something like that in order to sort of clean the space.
Ronnie Mola is with us, senior data reporter for Vox's Recode. Let's take another call now. Brad is here from Sockville. Good morning, Brad.
How you doing?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
I'm calling because I actually had a question. It was kind of in regards to the worker protection. With everything going on right now with limitations as far as daycares and babysitters can only take X amount of kids, my question is, where are the protections for the workers as far as people who have kids? I know two people alone who were fired last week because they tried to go to their employer and say, like, listen, you may be open, but I've still got kids. School is not open. I cannot afford daycare because I've been out of work for 2 months. And let alone that, there are daycares that, you know, generally they have or they can take a limit of 30. Right now they're limited to 8. But yet it doesn't seem like anyone is talking about protections for workers who may have kids right now, even for the next 2 or 3 weeks until school is actually like done for the academic year.
Yeah, Brad, thank you for bringing that up. And Ronnie, that is certainly an important conversation, but a different conversation than the reporting that you've been working on the office space itself. But I'm sure that you're hearing those concerns from employees who say, what do we do about the kids?
Yeah, I as you said, I didn't report on that, but I think that's hugely important. How can you expect people to go back to work when they have no place to put their children, when you know the daycares aren't open? I think that's going to be a huge part of the conversation going forward. And just even thinking of the employer that sort of does that sort of thing, that lays off someone because they can't watch their kids, that seems horrible.
In the last few moments we have with you, how has the pandemic changed your workspace?
Well, my workspace is my home right now. we have talked, my colleague we have talked with the office manager at our building to see what he's been working on. They're still figuring it out. You know, we're based in New York City. It's in a high up in an office building that's shared with a lot of other companies. They're trying to figure out the best way. For now, you know, our office is sitting empty and we're all working from our various homes and apartments indefinitely. But they're definitely trying to figure out what's the best way to let us back and when to let us back and how the office has to change,
Ronnie,
in order that we'll feel safe doing so.
Ronnie, thank you for joining us.
All right, thanks for having me.
Ronnie Mola, senior data reporter for Vox's Recode. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.